Hello, world. It's Mike Traverso with the Friends That Code podcast, where I get a chance to showcase some amazing people I know that just happen to write code for a living. Folks, today I have the pleasure of speaking with a developer that I met on Twitter a few weeks ago. She tweeted that she had applied for a job, applied to a job post via, well, a post. Instead of sending her resume over via an email or a web form, she had posted it via an HTTP post command. I found out about this, like many of you, via her incredibly popular tweet, which was very, very cool stuff. Now, we've had a lot of fantastic folks on the podcast before, and they've all done amazing things for their communities. And today's guest is no different in following that trend of wonderful folks. As a graduate of the University of Virginia, she's a mentor for Outreachy. And Outreachy provides paid remote internships for developers, designers, data scientists, project marketers, and more. And they're all about reaching out to help foster diversity in tech. Today's guest mentors other developers for this program. She has also mentored for the Spectra Hackathon this past summer. And Spectra is all about creating a safe and inviting environment for those identifying as female or other underrepresented genders in the tech space. Now, I mentioned earlier that I was introduced to today's guest via her Twitter feed. And if you catch her on Twitter, her tweets are a joy. Most likely she's celebrating the successes of others. If you've listened to the show, then you know I absolutely love this and wish everyone would do this more often. And that's where you can follow along with today's guest as she does something really cool. She's participating in her own 100 days of code. This means that she's committed to having to write code for at least an hour a day, every day for the next 100 days. And while she has a computer science degree from the University of Virginia and she's worked with cloud services and securing web apps, she's spending time doing something she loves and solidifying her software development skills at the same time. Software developer, volunteer, and mentor to newer software developers, and all-around good person. Ladies and gentlemen, today's guest is Maggie Negum. Maggie, thanks for hanging out today. How are you doing?
I am good. Thank you for that wonderful, wonderful intro. I don't even know what to say. I'm just like smiling really hard here, but I'm doing good. And I'm excited to be here. We've been trying to do this for a while now, so I'm glad we're finally doing it.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, no. And like I said, I wanted to have you on the show, for a while ago, and, it is a great opportunity to have this, you know, this chat session. And you know, it's funny because you mentioned before that we started recording that you listened to the show, and I was like, and I think you're probably the first guest who's listened to the show before they've been on. So I was like, I hope the introduction lives up to the hype. So I'm glad that it did a little bit.
Yes.
Okay. So I mentioned in the intro that you had a very unique experience applying to a new job. Can you explain that a bit for everyone?
Yeah, you're right. A few weeks ago, I had applied for a technical support role at a company called Plaid. They're a fintech company, a financial tech company. The position seemed really interesting, so I decided to apply for it.
Oh, excellent. And so what made you go that route as opposed to just filling out the form on their website or like emailing it to them? Because I imagine emailing it to them or filling out a form has got to be a lot easier. So what made you go the route of doing it that really super cool way of just posting a JSON payload?
Right. So, during that time, I was actually applying to a bunch of other roles and, you know, the process started to get like really repetitive, right? So you're just filling out a form, you're hitting the submit button, although it's a bit easier, right, and comfortable. When I saw that Plaid was actually offering two ways to apply, through the form or through a post request to an API endpoint, which is just, you're just sending your application manually. I decided to do it for the heck of it. I thought it would be fun. I find APIs really intriguing and I've worked a bit with them in the past. So it was just like a fun little experiment.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. And I imagine that you're probably pretty glad that they weren't like, okay, do a multi-part post with a JSON payload and say your Word doc and your for your resume and cover letter, right? I mean, that would have probably made it a little bit more, you know what, maybe I'll use the web form instead.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so their process, like I said, it was pretty simple. It was like a really simple post request. You're just sending, I guess, strings. So like your name, your email, like certain links. And so the process was really quick, which I think was the fun part about it as well. Because sometimes when you fill out like other job forms, it could take a bit longer. But yeah, super excited.
That is a good point. That is a good point. Like this probably was a lot faster. And so for folks that are interested in reading how Maggie did this, she's written up a how-to article on her DevTube blog. And I've included a link to that in the show notes. So now, Maggie, which came first, the thousands of likes on your tweet or your blog post getting picked up by the practical dev?
I would say the likes the tweet, because that actually prompted me to write the article in DevTube, because I was getting many questions like, how did you do this? What company did you apply for? So I figured I would just write it up and share it with the world.
Excellent. And for folks that are interested in this or who are just like interested in using, how do I send commands to an API? You know, for those folks out there, Maggie's article really breaks it down into the piece by piece, step by step. And, you know, for those of you who are used to using Postman, trust me, read the article. There's a cool tool that's in there. I won't ruin it. I want to have people, you know, get eyeballs on that article. And you'll learn a new tool that you can use to mess around with APIs. Now, Maggie, do you mind if I ask how that application went? Here's why I ask. Because if anybody's from Plaid is listening, I just want to let you guys know, like, for all of the publicity that they've been able to get out of this, that they've got this API process, I would hope that the company move forward with at least an interview instead of doing what a lot of folks tend to do in this industry, which is ghost someone and not even like reply back and say, no, thank you. So I would hope, and maybe I have to shame the folks at Plaid if they haven't done this. And I apologize if they have. So let's find out before I start shaming folks at Plaid, throwing them under the bus.
Well, unfortunately, you're right. I mean, I did get that initial email where it's like, hey, we received your application, but I didn't hear anything back afterwards. So, yeah.
Folks at Plaid, shame on you. Shame on you. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, that's a bummer. And that's kind of the way it is. But you have a really good attitude about kind of this process. And it's, you know, it's a good thing to kind of be able to say, okay, you know, I've applied and it is what it is and I'll move on. All right, let's move on to some more positive stuff. So as I've mentioned, like you've mentored folks that are interns in the Outreachy program, right? And this is a 3-month paid internship to help folks across the tech spectrum. How does this program work from the point of view of the intern?
Right. So like you said, it is a 3-month remote internship program for minorities in tech, people who have faced discrimination in tech. And it's basically a space for interns to work with an open source project. And throughout their experience, they're mentored. They're supported by, you know, the open source projects community, the Outreachy community, and just an all around really supportive environment for other, other people who are in tech.
Oh, yeah. Cool. And how did you find this program?
Right. So, as you mentioned, I went to the University of Virginia. I got a CS degree. And after I graduated, I actually ended up taking some time off, just because I was just really confused about where I wanted to go with my career. I had a lot of imposter syndrome. I was burnt out, to be honest. I took the time off and, you know, really thought about where I wanted my career to go. And through that, I was able to figure out, okay, hey, I really want to be in tech. So let me give this another shot. And, open source seemed the way to go for me because I live in rural Virginia. So there aren't any jobs around here, let alone tech jobs. I turned to the internet. And then when I was looking for full-time jobs, I realized that coming from, you know, being a junior developer, it was actually going to be really hard for me to get a remote position. So I decided to go open source. I was like, okay, I can do this. I can get experience. So I just did a bunch of Googling and stumbled upon Outreachy. And then when I saw that there were a remote paid internship, I was like, okay, yes, I have to do this. And yeah, the rest is history.
That's awesome. So you started out as an intern. Now you're a mentor. That's fantastic. And you know, let me say this. I kind of feel like I'm in the same boat as you to some extent, right? Because I now live in rural like I guess the rural parts of Tampa in Florida. So I totally sympathize with you with respect to being out in, you know, the rural part of the country, because there aren't a lot of positions. And sometimes, you know, when you do apply to some of those positions, it tends to, you know, that commute time, like for whatever reason, it tends to be a deal breaker for, you know, hiring managers, because they're like, oh yeah, that's too far away. I'm like, well, you hire me and let me figure out how I get here every day. So, but that's, like I said, that's it's really cool though, that you're mentoring for this program. And the one question I guess I'd have is, when you were in the program as an intern, like what were you doing?
Right. So, so I was an intern for LibreHealth. So it's a nonprofit that builds open source health IT software for people who don't have the resources for such programs, right? Such applications. And so my role, I was they called it a coding and docs intern. So I worked on bug fixing and then also technical writing. So it was a mix of both. And, you know, with the bug fixing, I was able to, you know, I basically fixed old and new issues, right? And the way I did that was through something called like root cause analysis, right? So I feel like when you're just starting out to code, right? And you encounter an issue, and the first thing you do is like, you kind of just go in and start coding, right? So this program kind of taught me to take a step back, figure out what is causing this issue, and then create a solution based on that. And then, you know, in regards to tech writing, I basically rewrote some of the documentation. So it was a really good, fulfilling experience where I got to pick up a lot of skills.
That's awesome. I mean, just listening to you say these things right now, it's bringing me back to when I started my career. Taking a step back, understanding what it is that you're trying to solve instead of just mashing away at the keyboard, writing documentation to go along with it, or updating documentation that you happen to find and replacing it with updated stuff, because, you know, sometimes, oh man, how many times would you come across code that didn't necessarily match up with the documentation?
Right. And I think that's so underrated, because I don't think a lot of people realize this, especially as developers, right? Because you're mainly focused on the code, right? Building and fixing, but documentation kind of goes in hand with code, because if you change something within the app, it can actually affect the documentation, right? And then that may cause the documentation to go out of date. And then when readers come and try to read your documentation, they may get confused because they may not match up with the application.
100%. And that's the thing. And so it's, you know, for companies that insist on having documentation, because I mean, I guess there's arguments out there that can be made. Like, people make arguments that say, well, you know, you don't necessarily need documentation if you can read the code and the code is readable. And I understand where folks are coming from there, but there are companies that just say, look, we have to have documentation. You can't just have a code base, that we need to have this documented somewhere. And that's where the problem is that that document kind of is created once and it's put in a folder.
Right.
And maybe it's on a shared drive and then it's kind of forgotten, because developers kind of move along a little too quickly. And there's this technical debt that the teams tend to build up on. So, and that part of it.
I think. I completely agree.
So, yeah. All right. So folks who are out there who are listening to this, you know, you've got a developer with a degree who's mentored, you know, developers, who has worked on documentation. And, you know, honestly, if I was hiring you, Maggie, I definitely would, I'd be asking for your resume right now. So, I, you know, after this, we'll find a way to kind of how folks who are listening to this can get in touch with you. Because I have a feeling that after folks listen to this, you might get a couple of feelers out there for hopefully. Okay, when you were doing the mentoring of other developers, what was the most rewarding part about that? And it doesn't have to be, it could be one experience, it could just be kind of a general vibe about it, but what was the most rewarding part about mentoring somebody else?
So for me, the most rewarding part was I was able to be the person I needed when I was younger, when I was first learning how to code. So when I was in university, I really didn't have a good support system, I would say, and you know, I didn't have a lot of confidence in myself. And, you know, coding is hard. I think anyone will tell you that. Coding is really hard. So I love being a mentor, because I can be that other person for other people. And, that's why I really love the outreachy program, because it gave me that when I needed it the most.
That's awesome. That's because, I mean, honestly, that's something you kind of tend to find with senior developers, right? Because a lot of junior developers tend to want to just become senior developers either for the pay or the responsibility. And I think a lot of them tend to overlook, one, the ability to communicate effectively with other people, and the ability to kind of help mentor along other folks on the team. So that's huge right there.
Right.
Okay. Sorry. And so I mentioned earlier also, that you recently mentored a hackathon, the Spectra hackathon. And this was your first time with that hackathon, right? So how did it go? Because you've got experience mentoring just developers, but now you're doing a hackathon. What was that experience like for
you? So Spectra was my first time mentoring at a hackathon. So I've participated in hackathons before, but just as a participant, but this was me being a mentor, so helping other people. It was a great experience. It was a 2-day hackathon, so it went by really fast. And I basically was just available throughout the hackathon, answer any questions. I did resume reviews. Yeah, I had a great time.
Excellent. It's a really unique hackathon, right? I mean, it's exclusive to individuals who identify as female and other underrepresented genders, correct? So that's pretty unique. I mean, have you been a part of other hackathons before? I guess I should have asked first.
So, as I mentioned, so I participated in 2 other hackathons before this, just as a participant. And then, this was the first time mentoring at a hackathon. And what made Spectra really unique was that, like you said, it was really to provide like a really safe environment for women and non-binary people to come and learn and create.
That's awesome. Excellent. So I want to take a second, because I imagine, right, because I've never done the hackathons before, but I imagine, you know, you've got a short period of time, you really need to be on point with the technology stack that you're working with. One way to do that is to work with that stack or work with that language or your framework as much as you possibly can. And sometimes folks, you know, refresh themselves by doing what they call the 100 days mm-hmm. of code challenge. And you've just started a 100 days of code challenge.
Yes, I have.
What inspired you to get into that?
Yeah, so I actually started a few weeks ago learning JavaScript. Like, I just wanted to refresh my knowledge and just, you know, I have a very basic level of JavaScript. So I wanted to take the time to build a solid foundation. And throughout that time, I was, you know, I was doing it alone. So I'd be like, oh, wow, like, I'd think about these things. I'd be like, oh, wow, I wish I could talk to someone else about this or share what I've learned or ask questions. And it seemed like 100 Days of Code was the perfect place to do that. So I decided, I was like, okay, you know what, I'm just going to learn in public. It'll allow me to share what I'm learning with other people and then learn with other people as well.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned before having like this sense of imposter syndrome. Because I would imagine that's got to be daunting to say, look, I'm doing this kind of type of coding today. And then part of that challenge is you have to post about it. And, you know, social media can kind of not be so pleasant, mm-hmm. I guess is the word. Is it daunting? Are you finding a lot of support when you post, you know, what you're doing for each day?
So yes, it is daunting. I mean, I had known about this challenge since I joined Twitter, which was like in February. So I've known about it for a bit of time, but I've always shied away from it because I didn't know if I could hold myself accountable, to be honest. And, you know, learning in public is, like you said, there are people out there who can be a little mean. I've always shied away from it. But like I said, as I was learning on my own, I found that I wanted to share it. And so I decided to go for it. And so far, the response has been really great. People have been really supportive, really intrigued, you know. So it's been a great experience so far, but I'm only on day 6, so we'll see.
Okay.
Right.
94 days left to go. I think it's wonderful that you're giving that a go. Because like I said, I think you're so wonderful in your tweets and on Twitter that I think that it's good to see that. Well, no, because every time I see a tweet from you, it's always, you're always celebrating somebody else's success. And so I hope that as you go through this journey of, you know, the next 94 days, that you're finding people celebrating your success as well and encouraging you to continue on, because it, you know, doing anything for 100 days every day is difficult, right? I mean, there's, you have it, you create a habit with it, and it's, you know, it's not the easiest thing to do. So coding every day for 100 days is, again, one of those things. And I just hope that you find as much encouragement along your journey as you would encourage somebody else along the same journey. And I see it. It's like, it's every day that I'll see a tweet from you congratulating somebody on a new job or, you know, their 100 days. So
thank
wish
you
a lot of luck with that. At the end of the 100 days, is there something that you're hoping to have learned? And maybe it's not about just coding, but maybe about yourself, or is it just like, I just want to do this to see if I can do it?
I think it's a bit of both. So I'm really, really focusing on the holy trifecta of web development, as I call it. So HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. You know, so we had a Twitter exchange at one point where I had realized that I was actually a self-taught web developer, which is something I would have never categorized myself as, because, you know, I went to college and I have a CS degree. But what I had realized was that I've been learning web dev on my own, right? So in that, right, I am a self-taught web developer. And because of that, my skills are a bit weak at the moment because I haven't put in the time. So for this challenge, I really wanted to build like a solid foundation where after this, I could, you know, explore other web technologies that are more in depth, you know, like your JavaScript frameworks. And then outside of the development skills that I want to gain, I want to just prove that I can do it. Because like I said, I don't think I'm really good at building habits. It's just something I haven't worked on yet. So I think this will give me the perfect opportunity to be able to get into that mindset of like consistency is key, and then maybe apply it to other parts of my life.
I'm sure, I'm sure you're going to be able to go through it successfully. It's just, like I said, it does take a bit of encouragement. And one thing I'll say is this: when I was doing the research for the show today, and I saw that you had said that you're a, you know, self-taught web developer, and I thought, I was like, wait, hold on. I went back and I read through my notes, and I saw that you have a CS degree from the University of Virginia. And I was, okay, wait a second. And I understand, you know, some, you know, universities, when they teach and they give you a CS degree, they're usually not going into web tech. You know, it's sometimes it's usually Java or it's C,
yes,
or C++. I don't know if I'm too old, because that's what, you know, I did C. In C++ in college. And the funny part about that is that I realized that when I was going through the research, that I'm almost exactly like that, because I'm a self-taught mobile developer. And to be honest with you, I'm a self-taught developer as well. Because, and here's the thing, college was fantastic in terms of, hey, they'll tell you which books to read, and you can read them, you cannot read them. But if you go ahead and you learn everything that you can in college, I feel you're still not prepared for your first day of your job as a software developer. Yep. You're just not prepared. It was funny, because when I started my first job, they sat me down and are like, you know, after 4 years of here's C++ on a Unix terminal. You know, it was, okay, here's Microsoft Visual C++, and have fun. This is what we need from you today. And it took me a little while to figure out just where the compile button was in the IDE, because, you know, you didn't have an IDE. So it's one of these things, like I said, I don't think people who go to school, get their degree, shouldn't feel bad about that, because colleges don't prepare you for your job on day one. So that's one. Your internships kind of can help do that, but you're not everybody's able to get an internship while they're in school. So folks like you sometimes can get it afterwards, but again, it's not the easiest thing to get.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, I wholeheartedly agree. And I think that's what I'm going to plug Outreachy again, just because I love the program. I think Outreachy really did give me like a real world experience by working in open source. And that's why I'm always plugging it on Twitter, like contribute to open source, participate in Outreachy, do all these things, because I do think there are ways to get like real world experience, like a small snippet of it. And that's one way to do it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, even like I said, I think that's how long an internship right. typically lasts, about 3 months. And then you're moving on to something else. Cause usually it's a summer internship. So a summer internship's about 3 months, or, you know, a semester internship's about 3 months. So yeah, it's great to know that there are programs out there that are like that, and they're reaching out to folks, to make the tech community just in general more diverse place. So that's, you know, the whole mission, I thought, when I was looking at what Outreachy does, it just seemed really fantastic. So yeah, we'll plug them again. We'll put them in at the bottom of the show notes and we'll give them some due there. And so folks can check them out. So if you're listening to this and you're currently in college or you're out of college, you know, you can go and check out Outreachy and, you know, see what they can help do for you, whether it's, or, you know, yep. you can apply to be a mentor. So I know you mentioned that you wanted to work with other JavaScript frameworks down the line. Now, what would be that JavaScript framework? I'm just off the top of your head. What are you really excited about maybe working with?
Let's see.
Is it maybe Vue or React Native or React?
So
or
I haven't Angular? Chosen. So I will say this. So it seems like React is like the go-to right now in the industry. But I am in the process of working with one of my developer friends on an Angular project. We've kind of just started, but it's just like a whole new ball field for me. So I'm still taking my time with it. So definitely Angular is the next step where I want to go. Although I've heard Vue is like it's like one of the simpler ones to use. So maybe I'll like try to work on that a bit. So I don't really have a specific answer at the moment, but I'm leaning towards Angular just because I'm working on a project with a friend.
Okay. Well, if you're interested in Vue, I happen to know someone who I interviewed for the show, Michelle Sinowitz, and she is the communications manager for Frontend Foxes, which used to be Vue Vixens. And they've changed the name from Vue Vixens to Frontend Foxes because it's a group built specifically to teach women how to code using front-end web technologies. So right now it's Vue, but they're looking at React down the road as well. So
thank you. I would love that information.
All right. So that's cool that you want to, I mean, that you've got a couple of different options open. That's pretty cool. All right, so like I said, I wish you all the best with the challenge, and hopefully when you finish, and I guess that's probably what, sometime in January of 2021.
Yep. Sounds about right.
Okay. Yeah. So if I'm not mistaken, yeah, about right there. So, hopefully you get everything out of it that you want to get out of it, and, you know, much success to that.
Thank All you right. so much. It means a lot. Thank you.
Excellent. So I want to ask you some questions that, you know, will help you look, like, I want you to look back on your career just a little bit, and we can maybe get some retrospective kind of analysis of your career so far. Do you mind?
Yeah, sure.
Excellent. Okay. So what have been some of the challenges you've struggled with coming up as a developer?
I would say the biggest challenge for me has been, I think, believing in myself. You know, as I mentioned before, when I first started out, I didn't really have a good support system. I felt like I was kind of like alone, like navigating this space on my own. And then not believing in myself didn't help either. So I think my biggest challenge is definitely just believing in myself that I can do this. I belong in this space. Yeah.
I swear, Maggie, you're setting me up, because I have, I give a talk and it's called You Belong Here, and other affirmations to help you beat imposter syndrome. And one of the things, and so I'm kind of, you know, I almost said, I'm kind of glad you mentioned that you have imposter syndrome. I wish you didn't, obviously, but I'm glad you mentioned it, because one, just mentioning that you have imposter syndrome, it takes a lot to kind of say that. And a lot of people don't admit that to, you know, to themselves. So the first step of, you know, of getting over that, or not, maybe just coping with it is admitting that you have it, and everybody has it from time to time, especially in tech, right? Because mm-hmm. I mean, think of it, like our profession, it's constantly changing every day. You know, we've got new frameworks, new libraries. I mean, what's the new JavaScript framework or library of the week, you know, or the month? And it's always with that. Oh, we got the new version. Everything is constantly changing. So one of the things, and it makes it difficult to kind of keep up. So if you're kind of keeping up in one area, then you're maybe neglecting another area, and you're seeing someone on social media post about that, and you're like, oh no, like I'm not keeping up fast enough. So it's super hard to keep up. So some of it comes from there. But one of the things that I tell folks in the talk that I give is to, one, you know, find some positive affirmation that you can kind of like a mantra, just kind of repeat over and over in your mind. And maybe it's something that you have a negative thought, and just kind of see if you can turn it around, or just find some positive mantra that you can repeat to yourself. So that's one thing, right? And I know this sounds really corny, but try it. The other thing, and this is going to sound even cornier, but one thing that I do to help with my imposter syndrome is that, you know, I try to identify three things that make me awesome, right? Okay. And like it in this tech, you know, world, what three things, you know, make me awesome? And then the other thing is, and like with that, don't ask a friend, like don't be lazy about it. Like really sit down and think, like, what makes me awesome? What have I done in tech or tech adjacent that makes me awesome, so that I don't, when I do feel really down about myself, or, you know, I feel like I can't do this, I can think of those three things and they pop back into my head, and it's not, can I do this? It becomes, how can I do this? Right. So right. Like the three things I have, and I tell people about me, is like, one, I've beat cancer twice. Two, I love to teach technology to folks, especially, you know, teaching folks how to code. And the third one is that, you know, like I said, I walked away from one career to start up another career in tech. So, and mm-hmm. so those are the three things that that I think make me awesome. Now, obviously, you're going to have your own three things, and I'm not going to put you on the spot for you to like, well, what makes you awesome? But it's something to consider. And I, you know, I'd like to kind of share the slides with you a little bit, just because you'll have a little bit more information, maybe that can mm-hmm. kind of help.
So, I would love that. Like I've started kind of doing those things. Like, you know, I've created like a little brag sheet, like my, you know, yeah. three things that I'm awesome at, or, but like completely valid points. And like you said, imposter syndrome exists. Like I think everyone has imposter syndrome. And it's,
if they
not,
tell you they don't, they're lying.
Right. Exactly. but it's a really important topic, just to be able to like recognize it, and then, work to like, you know, mitigate it.
Yeah. And you know what I find funny is that the folks who are worried about imposter syndrome the most that I've talked to tend to be like the most awesome people. So I've recorded a few shows with some guests, and, you know, we've had conversations either before or after, and, or they've heard the talk that I've given and they've said, yeah, you know, I felt a lot of the same way here, or I have imposter syndrome. And I was like, wait, hold on. You have imposter syndrome? Like, that's not possible. Like, you just like, no. And because it's just, but that's the way it is. Everybody feels that way. And it's just, it's a bummer, because it puts your whole mindset in a funk. So it really is a bummer, and it's hard to break out of. But mm-hmm. I think if they taught that in school, I mean, you know, if colleges are going to be useful, teach something to combat imposter syndrome. Right. Since you're not going to teach us, you know, how to use the real world IDEs, because licenses are too expensive. You know, teach us how to do something right. Okay. So yeah, that's a really valid point that you bring there. That's a huge struggle, and I think a lot of folks deal with it. And I'm glad you brought it up. But it's unfortunate that you had to.
Yeah.
All right. What are some things, or one thing, that you wish you knew when you were younger?
This is a good question. So kind of going off of the imposter syndrome. So I don't know, for some reason growing up, I didn't feel smart enough. And I think that was kind of like the root of my imposter syndrome that kind of led to me experiencing those symptoms. But I would tell myself that I am smart enough. You know, if I put in the hard work and persevere, I can do anything. And you know, that's something that I've actually, you know, when I took that time off after college, I actually did a lot of just like working on like my mental, my physical health, and kind of like reshaping my mind. So have you heard of like the concept of like a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset?
No.
Okay. So one of my favorite topics. So a fixed mindset is basically, you believe that you have these set of skills and then that's it. You can't change them. You can't gain new ones, anything like that. And then a growth mindset is more of like, okay, hey, I identify my weaknesses. You know, if I put in the time and the work, I can gain these new skills, right? And so for me, I had a fixed mindset growing up. And then, you know, when I took that time off to really focus on myself, I like identified that. And I had to like mentally work on shifting from that mindset. And I think for me, that was like a complete game changer in like combating against like imposter syndrome and just like not feeling smart enough. So yeah, I would definitely tell myself, you are smart enough. You can learn whatever you need to, as long as you put in the hard work.
Excellent. That's a really cool way of looking at things. Like, you know, changing the way, that you're looking at the world. And 100%, you know, the way you look at the world, the way you look at yourself, you know, you've got to start there, right? If you, mm-hmm. if you look at yourself in a positive way, the rest kind of, I don't know how to put it, but the rest kind of, once you start to realize you are a good thing in the universe, and I know this is getting right. wishy-washy here,
no.
but once you realize that, like you start, like things start to kind of roll downhill a lot easier.
Right.
You know, so things become a little bit more effortless and you enjoy it a lot more.
Yeah.
You're not worrying every moment about everything. So,
and working in tech, like you have to have a growth mindset. Like you said, there's always new technologies, new things coming out. And like, I think the first step is just believing that you can do it, as corny as that sounds. But yeah.
Well, the way you said it doesn't sound corny. The way I was saying about the universe, like that was corny. but I'm going to use that one, from now on. If you can do it, leave the universe out of it. Okay. So on that same note, though, right? So what's mm-hmm. one thing that you do to maybe say escape or clear your mind from work?
Ooh, okay. One thing.
It could be. It doesn't have to be one thing. It could be. You can name three things.
Okay. So for me, when I want to take a break from coding or work or anything like that, I watch a lot of TV. So I'm really into like comedy sitcoms. I've seen almost all of them.
What? What's the Okay, all you've seen all
almost of the all of them. Let me not say all, almost all of them.
Okay. Okay, so what's if you had to name your top, you know, your top two sitcoms? Like if you're being stuck, you know, someone's right. going to put you on a desert island. What are the two Blu-ray sets that you've got?
Oh, I can tell you right off the top of my head. Parks and Rec and Friends.
Oh, wow. Friends. I'm surprised by Friends. Parks and Rec is an amazing show, mm-hmm. but Friends, I feel like Friends went off the air maybe almost 20 years ago.
Right. So one of my best friends actually got me into Friends. And okay. we kind of bonded over. I think that's why it holds like a special place in my heart. But it's just a really funny show as well. Like it just makes me laugh.
It
so.
Is. Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Absolutely. That was when NBC used to be funny.
Okay. hot take.
Got funny. I'm sorry. Yeah. Hot take indeed. All right. So that's the first thing that you would do to escape and clear your mind from work, watching some TV.
Yes.
And you've got sitcoms in general.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay.
Second thing is I like to read a lot. So I'm really into like fiction. And recently I've been into like fantasy fiction, which is kind of weird for me because I didn't think I was going to be enjoying that genre. But yeah, so I read as well. And I think the reason why I like both the things like watching TV and reading is that you get to kind of experience like a different world in a way through, whether it's through words or just through, you know, the screen. So I do a lot of those things. So I'm kind of a homebody. So.
Okay. So when you mentioned reading about fantasy, so you mentioned TV, mm-hmm. so a lot, so fantasy in terms of like science fiction or more Game of Thrones? Like, where does that end? Like, if you have to, like, because there's maybe, I don't know much about all the different genres, but I would imagine Game of Thrones is probably on one end of the spectrum.
Right.
Like that type of fantasy. And then you've got sci-fi kind of maybe on the other end of it. And folks who are listening, please don't. I'm just trying to make an analogy, you know, like to find out, like, so where, which type of fantasy that you're interested in reading, like, or if you like, what's the last book you've read? I should have went with that
first. So Children of Blood and Bone.
Oh,
probably have not heard of it. Maybe not.
I have heard of it. Oh. I have heard of it. I have not read it though.
It's a really great series. And they're actually going to be making a movie series out of it. So highly recommend.
Excellent. So when you, what's always better? What do you find typically better, the book or the show or the movie?
Usually the book. But there have been some, I think, movies or TV shows that have surprised me enough. For me, the example, this might be a hot take as well, but Harry Potter, I love the movies more than the books. But usually I'm on the other end of the spectrum where I think the books are better than the movies.
Harry Potter books are a little too big to enjoy them over the movies, I think. For me. That said, I saw what the ticket prices were going for the Cursed Child show, which is like, which is a two-night type of event. So for folks who, there's a Broadway play or a London-based play called The Cursed Child. I might have to come back and edit this and change the name, but there is a play and it kind of picks up in the Potterverse where it's a few, maybe 20 years after the last events happen in the movie. Mm-hmm. And it kind of talks about Harry's son kind of getting, you know, mixed up, you know, with the wrong kid maybe. And in any event, so this is a great play, but you have to watch it over the course of two nights.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but I read the script for it, and it was because they published the script, and it was really, you know, fantastic. But any event.
I think we went off on a tangent here. But
yeah, but it's called Friends That Code, not True. Friends That Talk About Code. It's okay. Okay, so I've got one last question for you. Mm-hmm. And this will help kind of wrap all of our discussion about imposter syndrome, maybe just for now, in a little bow. Because folks in our profession don't get a lot of opportunity to promote themselves. Mm-hmm. So I want to give you a chance to do some self-promotion. What about yourself are you most proud of, you love the most, or something about you that you use to inspire confidence in yourself?
So I would say the most thing that I'm proud of myself for is that I don't give up. So case in point, this, my career, right? Which I guess it could be considered short, but the start of my career was really, really rough to the point that I kind of gave up at one point of thinking, oh, you know what? I'm not meant to be a developer, you know, and I kind of just let it go. But I just found myself back, you know, coming back. And so I'm really proud of myself for not giving up, because I've, you know, since then I've gained a lot of opportunities through like outreachy and open source that I could have dreamed of. So I would say I'm really proud of myself for not giving up. Self-promotion.
The reason I say self-promotion is really to kind of like, I want folks to kind of come away from this, because right. people don't, they don't promote themselves. And, you know, even if it's just in your head to promote yourself, to be like, look, I kick ass at this one thing. Mm-hmm. If you're not able to sell yourself, mm-hmm. right, on what you're selling, then why would your boss, you know, believe it? Why would your boss buy into it? Why would your colleagues buy into it? You know, the people who are listening to you give a talk, why would any of these people buy into it if you're not buying into why you're awesome?
Right.
Right. So that's why I ask.
So let me start this again. So I would say that I am very proud of myself for not giving up on chasing this career, I've been able to have all different kinds of experience, whether it's through doing like Q&A work, security work, just web development. I think I'm kind of becoming like a jack of all trades at this point. And I'm very proud of myself for that, because it takes a lot of, you know, starting from the beginning, in the sense that you're learning something new every time. And that can be hard, especially within the tech field.
Sure.
So, I'm just really proud of myself, and I'm proud of myself for doing this podcast, because this is my first podcast. I'm not a public speaker or anything, but.
Well, you've given a talk before. I know you've given a talk, and the best part about this is that there are no slides.
True.
So no one's going to see.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I think I have to explain this. So, I gave a talk at Mint Bean. Shout out Mint Bean. I think you all should check it out. It's basically a organization that puts on hackathons for people just to come code, network, find a job. And they invited me on to give a talk on contributing to open source as a code newbie. And I didn't realize when I started presenting that my slides weren't showing. So I just kept presenting until someone interrupted me. And they were like, hey, Maggie, you actually can't see your slides. So I kind of had to redirect it and just talk about memes for a short bit until I could get my PowerPoint slides on the screen. But it was so embarrassing. Oh, my gosh.
The reason I brought that up real quick is because I was hoping you would tell the story. Because the same exact thing, and I'm not lying. Okay. And I've given a lot of talks. I was a Google developer group organizer for a long time, where like it was once a month you had to give a talk. So I've done a lot of talks, a lot of sessions, like, you know, a lot of podcasts, things like this. And I gave a talk maybe a month ago. Yeah, a month ago. And same thing happened, except for me, they saw the slides. They just didn't hear any of the audio.
Ooh.
So I was talking for a good four minutes. God. And I don't know why it took so long, but it was weird.
It's like a silent show.
But anyway, they should have mentioned. Okay, Maggie, is there anything else you'd like to add or talk about?
No. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on this podcast. Being really supportive of my career and trying to help out in any way you can. This has been a lot of fun.
My pleasure. And I hope, like I said, I hope that through this, we are able to help in some small way present your career and you in general to the greater tech population. And they come out and say, look, I want to hire Maggie right now. So because that ultimately, right, that's what we want to have happen. I would love, and I know this is going to sound weird, I would love for your 100 days of code to be derailed. Because you got a job, because you have a job offer, and now you've got to start working. But so yeah, I would love to see that.
Okay, we'll see.
But anyway, so Maggie, I hope you had some fun hanging out today.
I did.
All right, excellent. For folks out there that are interested in hearing more from Maggie, you can follow her on Twitter at @MaggieCodes_. You can check out her blog on dev.2. You can check out Outreachy and Spectra as well. And all the links here I'll include in the show notes below. Thanks again, Maggie. And thank you all for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. And if you're subscribed, I'd love to hear feedback from you. You can email me at hello@friendsthatcode.com. Constructive criticism is always the best criticism. Or you can tell me what kind of guests you'd like to hear from in the future. Or if you really just want to scream at somebody, feel free to drop me a note. And with that, tell your friends, because next week we'll be back again with another amazing person that I know that just happens to write code for a living. Until then, be well, everyone.